This is Crossroads, a Get Religion podcast.
Well, maybe Newsweek isn't as big a deal as it used to be, or maybe this story about a website, a relatively new website called churchclarity.org that reports on the clarity of policies of churches in America on LGBTQ tolerance, maybe it's a bigger story than it seems. Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
How does a study by a fairly new organization website like Church Clarity garner a story in Newsweek?
Well, first of all, the whole idea that there is, in fact, an evangelical left is totally valid news material right now. I mean, we have been bombarded for the last 18 to 20 months with evangelical this, evangelical that, with all of it linked to Donald Trump. So the press out there has been, just look at it from their perspective. You're getting all these attempts from people like me and other people to say, evangelicalism isn't a monolith. There are a lot of different views inside evangelicalism on a lot of different issues. So in that context, you have a group of people, some of them with evangelical credentials, who are suddenly saying, we're trying to find out what evangelical churches are actually teaching and living out, how they're living out those teachings on LGBTQ issues. Now, that, first of all, is a newsworthy angle on all of this. The fact that it's coming from an evangelical left perspective, for the most part, makes it even more newsworthy. And then there's one more thing. In the age of the internet, they're not just talking about opinions here. The methodology of Church Clarity, for which I respect them for this, they're saying what we're going to do is peruse major church, parachurch, and denominational websites, and we're going to actually create a database in which we quote what they're actually saying on these issues and simply declaring them, or do they affirm gay rights in all the ways that we affirm them, meaning the people that are running the study? Have they tried to fudge it? Have they tried to hide what their beliefs are? Or are they very openly and explicitly opposed to the sexual revolution? And they say that right there on their website. The fact that they're doing this with publicly available on the record materials makes this not only newsworthy, frankly, it gives it more of a sense of integrity than if it was some sort of like people sneaking into pews, trying to record things on their phones and, you know, and sneaking out. This is very open public record material. So you see what I'm getting at? You got at least three angles there that from the viewpoint of any newsroom, this is valid stuff.
Okay, so let's talk about Church Clarity and what their method is here. You've said the attempt here on their part is to simply chronicle from churches' websites not only what the policies are in American churches on LGBTQ issues, but whether or not that stuff's buried so deep in the website that you can't find it unless you really drill down. Is that the big issue?
Or not there at all. Or not there at all. Or you have kind of, you know, in Baptist life, for a long time in Baptist higher education, you've had statements that say something like, we affirm biblical values on marriage and family. And then that's all they say. Well, sports fans, you know, in today's America, you've got to be more specific than that. You're not going to get away with assuming that everybody agrees on what biblical values are on those topics. You see what I'm saying? We're past that. That ship has sailed. That America is gone. which makes me begin to sound like Rod Dreher again here. But at some point now, you are going to have to answer these questions. As the liberal Baptist ethicist, David Gushee, said about a year and a half, 2 years ago, he said, on this issue, people will come and find you. There's not going to be anywhere to hide. And he's absolutely correct. And so I want to correct one thing you said, though. These guys don't just want to round the information up. Church Clarity is pretty open about its agenda and what it believes the right stance is on these issues. There's no question that they're trying to articulate a pro-gay theology stance in language that they believe evangelicals will start buying, and some evangelicals have. But you got to look at this again from the viewpoint of a journalist. The fact that they're an advocacy group, the fact that they're going to spin this information in their direction, still doesn't erase the fact that their methodology is interesting and valid, and that some of the information they're gathering is perfectly newsworthy.
I read Jonathan Merritt's reporting on this online, and I seriously, Terry, I probably spent, it was on a weekend, I probably spent a couple hours trying to figure out what my reaction to it was, because I had much of the same reactions you're talking about here. This is a legitimate enterprise to see what churches are saying. Yes, there's judgment, value judgments being made on the part of Church Clarity about what churches should be saying and how clear they ought to be on it. What I think what confused me is the other two elements that weren't so much LGBT.
Yeah.
But what Merritt drew out of their information was most large churches in the United States have white pastors. And
yeah, white male pastors.
White male pastors. And what was the other element that he pulled out there?
Well, I mean, basically, as always, there is the attempt to directly link sexual orientation with race. You know, as if either in U.S. law, let alone in traditional Christian theology, let alone in DNA science, these are things that directly relate to each other. But it makes a great headline to say the same people who oppose LGBTQ also oppose the ordination of women, also oppose, I mean, don't oppose, but they just happen to all be white. Which, by the way, that's one place in the study where I have some real questions, and some other people have as well. I mean, there are lots of African-American and Latino megachurches, and that struck me that there are only four or five of the largest churches in America that have people of color in leadership. That strikes me as rather strange. I mean, there are some really big African-American churches in America, and I wonder why that didn't show up in the study. But that's just kind of a parallel question I have here. The churches that they went after and that they probed their beliefs online are still newsworthy, and they're still interesting. I'm not quite sure their study was as broad as they thought it was on the racial and diversity issue.
Let me tell you what my pastoral response was after reading Merritt's piece and then thinking and going to look at Church Clarity.
So you're saying here in multiple personality syndrome.
Yes.
Your collar is now out.
Yeah. With the collar on, my concern was, and this may be a distant concern, but the way I put it, I actually contemplated even adding this to a tweet that I put out on Merritt's piece, but then I thought better of it. My fear is that churchclarity.org becomes the Southern Law and Poverty Center, kind of assembler of hate maps for churches. I'll be honest with you, that was part of my reaction.
Of course. Of course, that's how Newsweek chose to frame it, correct? I mean, there was no attempt whatsoever at balance. Like I said, you could have also spun the same data and say that the vast majority of American, large, successful American churches support ancient Christian teachings on these issues, right? That's the same numbers. It's a totally different way of expressing it, and it's not the way they would choose to. So, you know, once again, there is no question what they intend to do with this data, but that doesn't make the data invalid. It also, putting your pastoral collar back on for a second, how are you going to avoid these questions in the long run? Does anybody in a conservative organization like the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod think that they're going to just be able to continue to sit in the shadows on this issue?
You can't. I mean, I absolutely agree with you. And again, with the collar on, I say that individual congregations and then larger organizations need to do, at least in part, what Church Clarity is say they want us to do, which is be clear about what your policies and your teachings
yep.
are and will remain, and don't hide it. Don't attempt to obfuscate. Now, be prepared also then to have your name, your congregation's name, or your church body's name appear on their list.
Right. At the same time, though, much like I said at the Issues Etc. conference, you know, when I spoke, this is yet another reason why there need to be media committees in major churches. And there need to be media contact committees for regional associations of Lutheran Missouri Synod or Southern Baptist or Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. All of them need to have media contact people who are in constant touch with their local media and their local television stations, the local branch of the Associated Press, whatever it is. They need to be in regular touch with them and say, when something like this comes out, we would like a chance to defend our beliefs. Now, the wording that keeps getting used in these stories when you read parallel cases about campus ministers being fired because of their support for gay rights or whatever. This week I wrote two pieces for Get Religion that, looking back on them, they really are flip sides of the same coin. One piece was on Church Clarity, in which all the things that you and I talked about in this Newsweek piece. But I also did this piece about how you had press coverage of a dispute at an Evangelical Covenant school in the Chicago area at North Park University. And once again, you had press coverage of this case where a campus minister in a church that does not affirm gay marriage, a campus minister agreed to officiate at a gay wedding. She was then removed from her post as the campus pastor at this Evangelical Covenant. And also, temporarily, they have suspended her ministerial credentials as an ordained clergy person in their denomination. Once again, the story made no attempt whatsoever to find out the doctrinal contents of the documents this woman voluntarily affirmed when she chose to be ordained into that denomination. And they also didn't ask if there was a doctrinal covenant that she voluntarily signed in order to be an employee of that school. Now, why is that important? Well, Lutherans sure ought to know about the Supreme Court case with the 9-0 decision that was called what?
If I'm not mistaken, it was, were you talking about Hosanna Tabor?
Hosanna Tabor, in which basically the court again said religious organizations have a right in the staff related to their doctrinal work and their mission, they have a right to choose people and fire people on the basis of doctrine. So why am I drawing a connection between these two? Ironically, on one post, I was kind of vaguely, well, I was explicitly praising Church Clarity for at least getting on-the-record information from places that are worth getting on-the-record information from. And in the other story, I was chiding another group of journalists at Inside Higher Ed for failing to do exactly what Church Clarity does, which was to look at this story at this college and find out what the actual doctrines were. Now, is this college hiding its position on sexuality? Do they have it, like you said, buried so far down to the PDFs? Or do they not even have their doctrinal covenant in a place where people could read it and pass judgment on it one way or the other? It was very ironic to me what we had here. In one case, Church Clarity wants to put this information out. It wants to put it up on databases where people can access it and know what your church believes. At the same time, the press, in other cases, doesn't want to know what these groups believe in terms of explicit information, because then they'd have to face the fact that this woman was an ordained woman in this denomination and took certain vows, or that she had voluntarily signed a particular covenant in order to work at the school, let alone in a ministerial capacity. So I'm just saying we're entering an age where you should talk about these issues freely, openly, in doctrinal terms. Now, in the Inside Higher Ed case, here's the language you always hear. I just disagree with this group's rules. You'll hear the phrase rules and regulations. Well, folks, there are Christian statements in church history books on marriage, sexuality, sex outside of marriage, the nature of marriage, etc., that go back to the ancient church fathers. This isn't a matter of some picky rules being articulated on one particular denominational website. These are very, very ancient Christian traditions. I can't remember if in St. Louis, didn't I recommend that the Lutherans, when faced with questions on this, might even start quoting Pope Francis?
I think you did.
And quoting the Roman Catholic Catechism. Quote Orthodox Jewish documents. Show that this isn't a narrow set of little rules. This is an entire biblical and church history worldview on what the human body is about and what marriage is about and what sexuality is about. And it's not just rules that you can call your lawyer up and say, hey, can we erase clauses 2 and 4? This is really heavyweight biblical doctrinal material that people are arguing about. I'm saying churches may as well go ahead and wrestle with the fact that these arguments are not going to go away. People want to know what you believe on these topics, and there are organizations who want to find out what you believe, whether you want them to or not. So why not be open and articulate and press-friendly in terms of attempting to get stories where, at the very least, you have a balanced, fair-minded, accurate representation of what both of these groups believe doctrinally, both the doctrinal traditionalists and now, in this case, the new emerging evangelical left.
I foresee a potential story in the second part you've just described there, and that is the boards of regents of various secondary ed religious institutions say, we need to do this. Their lawyers say, you guys really need to do this. They do it, and the attendant story is they're going to be asking faculty to retroactively sign a document that some of the faculty are going to say, no way, I'm not signing it. I'm not signing your doctrinal covenant. That wasn't the deal when I was hired. And
exactly.
That's a big story.
At which point, the board of trustees of those organizations are going to have to say, because of the legal climate in which we live, we believe that we must be more explicit about what we believe. These have always been our expectations in the past, but today we no longer can do it quietly. This is now a part of who we are. This is the covenant we are. This is what you're going to sign if you're going to teach in this place. As the Supreme Court, 9-0, has recognized that religious institutions have a right to do. I don't see any way around this issue.
It's very far-reaching, Terry, because it's not as though faith-based is the term that's often used. Church-related, para-church is another term that's used. It's not as though those institutions are a small thing in American society. They're a really, really big deal, dug deep into the trenches of society.
Well, especially in healthcare, there are lots of religiously based hospice services in America. In fact, the real cutting edge of all of this is in any religious ministry that also interacts with the public on services that are also provided by secular institutions. Because there are people who think the religious institutions should have to behave themselves in the same manner as the secular. So you see this with hospitals, you see it with women's clinics, pharmacies. Yes, we're even seeing it with things like businesses that sell cakes and do flowers for weddings. We're really in a stage where all of these issues are going to be pressed to their legal limit. Neither side is going to back down. And I don't see any long-range option for religious groups not to stand up for what they believe, if they're going to choose to do so.
Do you think that the media are going to be able to report on this? This is obviously coming. These are stories that we will be reading for the next decade, Terry. There's no doubt about it. What's your confidence in the media's ability to sort out the issues of doctrinal covenants or what a church puts on its website with respect to LGBT issues?
Okay, three levels to this. There are some media who have already made up their mind that traditional religious beliefs equals racial bigotry. There are people who are going to abuse this no matter what. In the middle, however, you have a lot of news organizations that I honestly don't think they realize that when you teach at North Park University or you teach at Baylor or you teach at a Missouri Synod Lutheran school, that there are documents that you voluntarily sign in order to do that job. I honestly don't think they know to go to the website and keep digging and digging and digging until they find out the actual legal covenant language that faculty affirm, right? Never forget that ignorance is a big factor in journalism. It's really hard to dial a phone number if you don't know it exists. It's hard to probe the contents of doctrinal covenants if you don't even have any idea what a doctrinal covenant is. I'm still, at this point, amazed. We get, almost every week it seems like, we get a story where people are still shocked that the Roman Catholic Church thinks it might be a good idea for its teachers, music ministers, and stuff to be at least neutral on the church's teachings instead of visibly attacking them, primarily through being a part of gay marriages. I'm amazed that there are people who think still that the Catholic Church doesn't have teachings that are relevant under those circumstances. Well, see, you've got the press that aren't going to be interested in fairness, balance, and accuracy. In the middle, you have a lot of press that I think that would be if they knew about it, which is one of the reasons why I think it's so important for ministers and media committees at institutions to meet with their local press, be in constant touch with it, with the leaders there. They should handle these things exactly the same way the gay community does, which is make contact, offer information, give telephone numbers, and say, if anything comes up related to this, please give us a call so we have a chance to defend what we believe. And then third, there are journalists out there that really are old-fashioned and fair-minded, and they know, they're informed. There are religion writers at some of the best newspapers in America that know all about these things. And when they call, instead of sending them a boring press release that only vaguely affirms what you believe in mealy-mouthed language, you better give them a good interview. And you better explain what you believe. And by the way, you should record yourself as you explain it, and then you should post what you told the local media. Post a transcript. The solution here, we have no solution that's possible except more information and more accurate information and more fair-minded information. Silence and hiding is no longer an option on any of these things, period.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and of the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here again.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
Crossroads is a joint production of GetReligion.org and Issues Etc.